This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 26th at 10:25 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like news hosts and reporters will come up with something other than boots on the ground to describe soldiers and Marines possibly invading Iran. I don't know. How about ground troops? Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who also overuse worn-out cliches when making their points. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week goes to a mode of transportation. But first, we want to dig a little deeper into two Ohio political stories we touched on last week. The lack of transparency at Jobs Ohio, the state of Ohio's privately run economic development department, and GOP candidate for Governor Vivek Ramaswamy's call for the consolidation of some Ohio colleges and universities. We'll start with Jobs Ohio. Jobs Ohio is not in the news because of a big new development project, but because of its role, however small, it played in the sudden resignation of OSU President Ted Carter. Carter quit after admitting to having an inappropriate relationship with a podcaster sponsored by Jobs Ohio. The agency gave her $60,000 for four episodes of the little-watched podcast on veterans employment. Former Governor John Kasich, who helped create Jobs Ohio, took to social media to criticize the deal and accused Jobs Ohio of mission creep. That brought a response from Attorney General Dave Yost, who criticized Kasich for creating a publicly funded agency that operates with no oversight. Yost urged his fellow Republican Kasich to look in the mirror. He said, quote, "As auditor of state, I worried about such things. You, Kasich, ignored a subpoena and twisted every arm in the legislature to pass a law to stop me from auditing Jobs Ohio. What other things have not come to light?" Unquote. To help us better understand this story, we turn to WOSU's Columbus on the Record panel. This week, progressive activist Morgan Harper, Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis, and State House reporters Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network and Karen Kassler of Ohio Public Radio and TV.
Karen Kassler, it's been a while. So let's have a little refresh of Jobs Ohio. It is a public agency, but it's completely private, and that's the way it was set up. What's going on here?
It was created in 2011 when Republican former Governor John Kasich took office. He was frustrated with the Ohio Department of Development, saying that there were too many opportunities that Ohio was losing out on, too many companies, too many jobs, and that the state was moving at the speed of government. He wanted to see it move at the speed of business. So this agency was created. It's funded with liquor profits. As of 2013, it's got a 25-year deal for liquor enterprise. And so there's no taxpayer dollars here. But that also allows Jobs Ohio to escape public records laws. They do release some information, but it's not as transparent as a state agency would be. And that's been one of the criticisms about Jobs Ohio, is that there really is not a whole lot known about why they're doing and what they're doing.
So what's the attitude at the State House these days? This is a story that's only about a week old now, but is there more calls for better oversight?
So I spoke with the Speaker, Matt Huffman, about this, and he said essentially they're not planning to bring in Jobs Ohio and hold hearings on this $60,000. But he did assert that the state legislature has a role, that this was set up by statute, mm-hmm. and that this isn't outside of their realm of control. In the middle of the week, a couple of lawmakers introduced a bill that would add some transparency issues, bump up the audits, require Jobs Ohio to come into the State House occasionally and kind of explain what projects they're working on. Right now, Jobs Ohio doesn't have to come in until the liquor profits are up, and that's 2035.
They extended it, too, I believe.
They extended 2053. Yeah. So I think they don't really need to set foot in the State House and say what they're doing for decades now.
So it's funded through a public resource, which was the liquor profits, mm-hmm. the lease on the liquor sales. But there are no shareholders, Mike, and no accountability to any government agency. It's like a family-run business with it's $300 million. What could go wrong?
A lot. And we're somewhere, this might just be the tip of the iceberg, but we don't know. Jesse just mentioned a piece of legislation, Justin Pazulli. It's a bipartisan bill, by the way. The Republican is Justin Pazulli, and that does have some teeth. I would take it one step further. There's 9 members of the board of Jobs Ohio. The first one is the governor. The governor is a board member. He gets to appoint the other 8. Wow. Okay. But we don't get to know what's going on behind the scene. Why don't we do this? Add to that bill and say they have to be Senate confirmations for all the members. I'm a member of the state medical board. I have to be confirmed by the Senate if I want that seat. Just because the governor nominates me doesn't mean I don't get it. I get it, excuse me, unless the Senate. So let's confirm it. Let's ask tough questions to these guys and gals before they get on this board that's behind closed doors that no one can see about. We need some oversight. LSC said in 2021 that less than 60% of the liquor profits went to new development. Where's the rest of the money going? Mm.
This is a drop. This isn't even a drop in the bucket. This is $60,000 from a $300 million organization. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. As scandals go, this is pretty minor. This is a grain of sand.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot going on in this specific example. Yeah. The dollar amount is not a lot, but the connection to OSU, the governance of OSU is another question of people asking questions of what is happening in Ohio, and are we looking out for our institutions, and are we using money wisely? But getting back to Jobs Ohio in particular, that $60,000 might be indicative, as other panelists have already mentioned, of more problems. And the other thing I would say is, you know, a lot of people, it's not that we don't think there's any good uses going. I was just in Athens this week looking at the Athens Armory. They were able to include money from Jobs Ohio in their capital stack. But if there's that level of funds and we don't have these basic measures of accountability, the chances are a lot of it's going to things that we wouldn't all support.
Well, and Ohio State, no offense to the university that I graduated from and my son goes to right now, is not known for its transparency in many cases. So you've got that involved here as well. But I think what's interesting
is... And it's like clear glass compared to Jobs Ohio.
Well, true. Good point.
We can do public records requests at Ohio State. And it takes a while. But we get them.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, too, is to see how things are different. When Jobs Ohio was created, there was a lot of support for it. Kasich had brought it to the legislature. It passed. There were lawsuits, but they went away. And now you're seeing what really seems to be some concern about what's happening there. Some of the concerns that were raised at the beginning by people who were opposed to Jobs Ohio, who they felt like they were not being heard. Now you're hearing those, you know, 10 years on.
Jobs Ohio gave $150 million to the Intel project. That's not going as well as planned. Is that something lawmakers will start to pay a bit more attention to because of this $60,000 podcast?
I think it's possible. I think when you only see the results and you don't see the process of how we got here and you only see what money does go out when there are projects like Intel, which have not been completed on anywhere near the timeline that they expected to, people start to ask questions, and I'm sure that would be something that they would like to talk about.
And the only other point I would make is there are agencies within the state government that have the ability to deploy development resources, right? Is it necessary to have this quasi-private, almost like a family business, like you said, to be able to support good projects and even think about, when necessary, certain tax incentives for those projects? A lot of other states have seemed to be able to pull it off without
the
Jobs Ohio.
Balance between speed and bureaucracy, and that's what fuels it.
My guess, it will take more than questions about a $60,000 award to a podcast to prompt lawmakers to change the way Jobs Ohio operates. Now, if the Intel project completely fails to live up to expectations, look for a lot of scrutiny into that agency. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Welcome back to Snoligoster. We return to our Columbus on the Record discussion. You know, you can watch every episode of WOSU's Columbus on the Record on the WOSU News YouTube channel. Again, our panel this week, State House reporters Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network, Karen Kassler of Ohio Public Radio, progressive activist Morgan Harper, and Republican strategist Mike Anadakis.
The Republican candidate for governor, Vivek Ramaswamy, this week once again drew criticism for a bold idea. When touting his plan for eliminating the state income tax, he said the state had to cut costs and operate more efficiently.
Look at the number of universities in our state. I love universities in Ohio. I want us to have the best universities. But we have too many of them.
Absolutely.
They need to be consolidated. And when you consolidate them, they can actually be centers of excellence who are actually the best in their respective domains instead of trying to create replicas and clones of one another throughout the state.
Democratic rival AB Acton pounced, calling Ramaswamy out of touch with Ohioans. Ramaswamy's campaign later argued the candidate was not calling for the elimination of schools, just cutting the costly bureaucracy. But Mike Anadakis, he said clearly, Ohio has too many universities. Is this another case of him taking a bold stand and getting out maybe too far ahead of where people were thinking?
No, look, people can make a statement and then clarify it, and that's exactly what Vivek did in that case. But look, I'm in agreement with him. Our taxpayers, each of us around this table, pay taxes. 14 four-year universities in the state of Ohio, 23 two-year community colleges in the state of Ohio. We have too many. Why is Kent State 15 minutes away from Akron offering the same classes, the same dorms, the same presidents? We have two presidents, two comms directors, two this, two football teams, two basketball teams.
So what else?
Columbus State, Ohio State, 10 minutes away from each other.
Stick with the statement? Because he really walked it back.
He did.
If you have too many of something, you have to get rid of them. If you have too many socks in your sock drawer, you get rid of the ones with holes and the ones that don't match. Okay. You get rid of them. That's what he was saying we should do.
But he also said in that clip, we should focus on centers of excellence. Yeah. The University of Akron, polymers, best in the nation, in my humble opinion. I'm an Akron grad from law school there. Their polymers are second to none. Kent State, I think they're really good at journalism, nursing. Let's let them do nursing. But why do we have Cleveland State Law School and Akron Law School? It's redundant. We don't need two. So that's what he meant. Why do we have two of everything 10 minutes away from each other? It's too expensive. We can't afford it.
It's funny, everything odd that Vivek Ramaswamy says is a reminder to me how, especially right now in Republican politics, you don't necessarily need to be very good at running for office to continue to have legs if you have the backing of Donald Trump and a lot of money. Because for most candidates, if you say something that's really silly and people don't like it, well, then there's going to be some repercussions for that. And he's been able to just kind of secure this primary. So that's one point. On the actual substance of how many schools we should have in Ohio, I think that Amy Acton was right to critique this. Obviously, he thought it was a mistake to say, because to your point, he walked it back. But again, throughout the campaign, especially as we get into that general election, we have to not only critique, but also then offer that kind of forward-looking vision of, okay, there is a real discussion to be had about the future of education in Ohio, and what's our take on that as Democrats?
And Acton's campaign really seized on this by putting out a bracket and calling it Vivek Ramaswamy's March Sadness and pitting colleges against each other and crossing them all out. So they really seized on this a little bit. But I think this is not a new idea. Going back again to John Kasich, when he was in office, one of the first discussions that was being had, and Jim Petro, the former attorney general, came forward with this, proposing duplicative programs, getting rid of them, and especially programs that cost a lot of money, like aviation. There were a lot of schools that had aviation programs. Those are expensive. But I think one of the solutions here is community colleges. And you hear people on the conservative side and the progressive side talking about how community colleges can really play a role in lowering college costs and providing basic education before you get to the higher levels of individual majors.
Any person who follows a school board knows that closing a school is impossible. But you look at the University of Akron and Wright State, enrollment is down 39% in the past 20 years. University of Toledo down 32%. Cincinnati is up 60%. OSU and OU are up about 15%. So they're doing okay. But Akron, Wright State, Toledo, that's some serious problems there. Is Vivek onto something here?
I mean, I think there are very real challenges facing higher education, especially as there are fewer people going to college. And these are things that we're going to have to grapple with. Is consolidation the right answer? Obviously, Vivek thought so for a moment and then kind of declined back from that. Like you said, it is controversial to want to close someone's alma mater, and that will always draw a lot of attention.
Yeah. And I would add one thing really quick, too. There was a study done by the Center for Community Solutions a couple years ago about the economic impact that these colleges and universities, whether public or private, have, especially in smaller communities. Yeah. So if you close those schools, you're going to really hit the economy of those smaller places.
But if colleges and universities, both public and private, continue to see drops in enrollment,
consolidation likely is inevitable. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. And this week, we give it to an airline. It's a first for Snollygoster. As you probably know, Congress and the president have partially shut down the government. Democrats in Congress won't approve funding for the Department of Homeland Security until it changes its immigration enforcement practices. The White House and Republicans so far have refused to budge. So, among other things, that means TSA agents at airports are not getting paid. And after more than a month of not getting paid, many have stopped coming to work. You really can't blame them. That has led to really long lines at airports and many passengers missing their flights. And then airlines having to clean up the mess and rebook those passengers. So, Delta Airlines announced it would no longer provide special services to members of Congress. Those services included airport escorts, a dedicated reservations line that allows lawmakers to make last-minute changes, you know, stuff like that. Well, no more. At least not until the shutdown ends, TSA agents get paid, and those lines shorten. So for making senators and congresspeople line up in zones 4 through 8 and gate-check their carry-ons, Delta gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. If you like what you hear, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and don't forget to tap the follow button so you get every episode. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.